Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Hey, it's This Life Podcast. You're not going to hear the fancy opening from Bob Forrest because he is not here. In his stead, I have the great Julian Barbary.
I'm a big hat to fill. Bob the Monster.
That's right, Bob and the Monster. Let me read a little bit of Jillian's
bio.
Let's see, Good Day LA for how many years?
20. The NFL 20 for 10. Years. I'll save you time. I did Extreme Dating for 4. I did, it's a dating show. I did Good Morning Miami, a sitcom. I did
Skating with the Stars.
Yeah.
Now it's the Drive Home with Julian Barbary on KBC 79 to hear at the same station I have, and Mike have a show on there from 3 to 6, Monday through Friday. The Drive Home with Jillian and John. And let's see, what was that? American Idol Extra? What was that? Reality?
Oh, it's another show I did. I don't know. It's all, they
Teen
all
Choice
blended
Awards.
In one. Sure.
Anyway, if the bottom line for me is any Stern fans out there.
Yeah.
I know we have a few because we have Eli Braden on this show.
More importantly, I love Eli. And I'm like, when am I going to do a song parody with you, Eli?
Okay, so we'll get Eli and you and I will do a song parody.
Okay.
With him. And
because I keep saying, if you need a girl, if you need, I'm the girl. Because I can sing this, I can do that. We can. And every time I hear, like, right now I'm obsessed with Ronnie and Aruba and Aruba. He went to Aruba. You know, they call it Aruba.
What? But so anyone knows Stern knows Jillian. Yeah. She's a legend on that show as well. Were you listening to Ronnie this week?
Yeah, I'm obsessed.
Me too.
I'm like, who needs A-list celebrities when you have Ronnie Mund? I could listen to this all day from how we're talking about Ronnie with his hair and he gets in the pool and
he gets so he got all pissed off at
that's what I love. Fight between Brent and him. That was the greatest fight ever. It's like, you cannot, and you know that family really well too. You go in there and you think, oh, this is great. You could talk freely. No, you can't. You can't. And I've done the same thing like with Howard. In the commercial breaks, Howard will, he's so sweet and he's so kind, but then he gets on air. He goes for the jugular. He knows how to do it. Everyone asks me, are those fights real? And I said, of course they are. But my question is, what are the rides home like with Ronnie when he's got Howard in the back?
Because I just thinking that last week when
Awkward.
He was going, hey, man, stop doing it. You're here to work for me. You know, stop that show. I'm thinking, God, hey, we're on the air here.
Hi, producer Susan. Little thing called on air. Love you, though. Love you.
Also
love
with
your
us
work.
Is Jenna Kravitz. Jenna did a recent This Life, and she actually agreed to come in and guest with us as well with me and Jillian. Hey, Jenna.
Hey, I feel like I thought my resume was impressive, but you just spent like 8 minutes reading Jillian, so now I feel like.
Aren't you a neurosurgeon? So yeah, mine's so extreme dating neurosurgeon at fucking
Cedars
Sinai.
She's a neurosurologist, but describe
whatever.
What that
same
is
thing.
Again.
You're very smart.
So neurosurgeons are psychologists.
I'm really smart. That's the thing. People are like, you're so smart. Like, I don't know. Is that like the like? But, and you have a nice personality.
If you're a gorgeous woman, they don't know, or they like, oh, like,
no, you
oh
can't
my
be
God.
Smart. You can't. Actually
yeah, you're not
be,
allowed.
You can't be smart
because people
attractive.
Have to put. It's like Carmen Electra. It's like, okay, you're super hot, so we'll put you in the Playboy box. What? You're a neuropsychologist. This does not work. Does not compute. Meh, meh.
Well,
don't
you know what?
At Joe's.
Being a neuropsychologist has definitely helped my game with men over 70.
Well, describe
70.
What it is. What
yeah,
is
I'm
it?
Going to right
over
now.
Over 70?
Yeah, over 70. So I'm actually, okay, like, well, I'm like a geriatric neuropsychologist, right? So I've focused my research and my interest in working with old people who have memory disorders. So, and in the hospital, I basically see everything. But, you know, you get a lot of people who don't want to participate in neuropsych because neuropsych comes to see you generally, I would say 70, 80% of what I do is for capacity evaluations. Like, oh my God, are you going to take away my driver's license? Do I need a conservator? You're taking away my freedom.
Yeah.
And so, like, it's bad news when I show up, right?
Yeah.
And so what I do is basically – we have a battery of tests.
So it's like an assessment that you put on them. But they know they're being tested. So automatically they could be defensive. They could be.
Total. But we have measures that will help us tease those factors out.
Neuropsychologists are clinical psychologists that do extra training afterwards.
Right.
To do these neurologists. Okay. 2 years? 2 year post?
Two year postdoctoral fellowship in neuropsychology. Yeah. And then you can go out and do these tests. And so, and then we take the tests and we look at them and we go, okay, what does this mean about this person in real life? So if you take memory tests and we see that after 30 minutes, you can only remember 30% percent of what we initially present you, then I tell the physicians, like, hey, if you give them a medication list of 10 medications and you don't write it down for them, 30 minutes later, how many are they going to remember?
That must be so, no 75-year-olds. No, seriously, because I'm dealing with that all the time.
It depends on, you know, the normative data, but yeah. But it's more generous as you get older. But I always, you know, I get a lot of resistance from young people, like brain injuries and things like, but like, oh. I'm telling you, men over 70, they're willing to do just about anything. Like, I got that down. I mean,
if you want to date a man with one foot on the banana peel and the other in the grave,
you're thinking
fine.
Like I look at it, and I've had a marriage proposal, and this guy had like, you know, he was like incontinent, and I, you know, and my other friend was like, well, how big is his estate? You know, I mean, like, this could work for you, and I, you know, so okay. It's a good dating pool.
But you also work with people that have brain injuries from, I'm thinking trauma, motorcycle accidents, yeah. Things like that.
Anything that comes in through the ED.
She's done a lot of celebrity stuff too, because she works over at Cedars. So
only imagine. Yeah. And I think about those people that are like 25, 26, whose lives are on one path, and in one split fatal decision,
yep.
Their life is completely changed. And then when they're recovering, how you have to, I can't even imagine.
And with celebrity, a lot of drug overdoses.
Of course.
Well, there's other comorbid issues. I mean, that's the problem.
The psychiatric stuff.
Yeah. I mean, addiction, psychiatric stuff. So
was your dog, not my son, by the way.
Right.
Rex. No, he looks like a Rex.
He's amazing.
You like him?
I need another dog.
He's got an Instagram account. He's very popular.
Well, yeah, I saw him earlier. I think he was dry humping your other dog.
No, he's trying to eat her, I think, more than that.
I think he likes me. Yeah. Same impact on 70-year-olds.
Very nice.
I know. They sniff me out.
Narcissistic dogs. Narcissistic hyperactive dogs. Well, that's pretty much the category.
Totally.
All right. So neuropsychologists do postgraduate training. They do testing, and they're very accurate assessments of people's psychiatric and neurological functioning.
Cognitive, right.
Yeah. And some do more on the psychological side and some more on the neuro side, right?
So a neuropsychological assessment actually should and can include both. Yeah. It depends what the referral question is. I mean, we get people – I saw someone last week who was questionably conversion disorder with seizures that were – no EEG activity to prove that.
Y'all are doctors. Fictitious What's seizure. Conversion disorder?
So it's the conversion of, at its core, it's the conversion of emotional distress into physical symptoms.
Ooh. And fictitious seizures.
Right. And so they create these things like seizures.
Yeah. I think fictitious seizures is because I've seen a lot of it.
So they're real seizures
No, they're not.
They think they're real, and sometimes they look kind of real, but mostly they don't.
But then when you hook up these electrodes to their heads and you watch over the course of days, when they have a seizure that they report, quote unquote, you know, and they start convulsing, the EEG will tell us if there's actually a seizure going on
in their body. In my experience, there are two things I've seen. I've got a lot of these people in my over the years, and they tend to have primitive personalities.
Totally.
Right? And B, I see it as almost a panic attack or something, almost an expression of anxiety, because they will go, I'm having a seizure. I can't handle things. And they'll fall on the floor. And I'm like,
how a seizure goes. Do your research, man. I know. Well,
when you say primitive personality, do you mean like alpha male?
Go ahead.
But also someone with really poor coping.
Really underdeveloped personality.
Yeah, no maturity.
Can't function socially, right. Doesn't really understand.
Got it.
But I've also seen some really high functioning people, interestingly. I mean,
with fictitious seizure.
Oh, yeah. So like either end of the spectrum.
And the really scary part about it is they often also have a bona fide generalized seizure disorder. So they sort of learn about seizures because they had them when they were younger.
Right.
And so it's a very strange, I don't think it's fully understood myself, but
it's very hard to treat.
Oh, yeah.
And so to answer your question about the assessments, like I had this
case
last week.
And they end up on
week.
Tons of meds. And
tons. Yeah. But I mean, so that's because a lot of doctors aren't like skilled enough to actually figure it out, and then
they're also medically legally afraid, because they're trying to make these things stop.
Yeah.
I had a patient with a fictitious seizure, and she fell off a bus.
Yeah,
I mean, they'll take it to the mat. They will take it to the mat sometimes.
Yeah, but I mean, so we have like these personality type tests that we can give that will help determine whether someone's exaggerating or you know they
do they know that they're doing
question.
It.
No, it's not actually it's not a conscious process.
Think of a panic attack that goes bad.
Right.
Okay.
You can't, like, I feel badly for them because you can't blame them. It's not like they're consciously doing it. They believe it's real.
And it's frustrating to deal with because they resist.
I can't imagine.
They don't want to get – most of them don't want to get better.
They get a lot out of it.
Yeah.
But the
there's a lot of attention for being sick.
And the classic conversion disorder was Freud's, which had a numb arm or something or paralyzed arm. Anyway.
I recall the story, but I don't
know. Yeah, I think those end up being – related to childhood traumas, oftentimes, and so it's sort of just the way the brain is disintegrating parts of the emotional systems, it can actually disintegrate parts of the sensory and motor stuff too.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's really the thing about trauma. Now, you don't talk about your trauma much anymore, Jillian.
Yeah, I'm really over it.
You're not over it. You can't be. But you used to talk a lot more about it.
I was very open because I thought it would help other people, and I think I've helped as many people as I can, and I've just moved on. It didn't define me, but it certainly helped push me where I am, and I never forget about it. But when I say I'm over it, it used to be in the forefront of my daily life. Right. I used to function and think, you know, it would come up a lot. It hasn't come up a very long time.
That's great.
Yeah, but I'm very, you know, for me, cognizant about telling my kids about predators and what's out there, and they come in many forms. They're not always monsters. They could be family members. They could be clergy. They could be, you know, people you've known for a long time.
Jillian had to deal with all the whole scattergram.
I did. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what happens once you're somehow the victimizers. I don't know if does neuropsychology talk about this at all. Somehow the victimizers sniff out somebody that's had trauma. They can sniff it. They sense it. It's
for me, I think I told you, I always thought because I was adopted, I'm like, oh, I'm not their flesh and blood. Yeah. So I already at a tender age of 6, 7, 8 was I was
intellectualizing it.
Completely intellectualizing it and giving it not a pass, but just saying this is why this
happened. You're giving it a reason.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But in your own head, you actually have to do that. I mean, it's a lot of
kids sit around going, why me, why me?
Well,
why me?
Yeah. Or you, there's a couple ways of dealing. But I also remember talking to one, I think it was a psychiatrist that I spoke with, but they talk about there's compartmentalizing and then there's where something's happening to you. And I remember one specific incident where I literally left my body, was watching it happen. Yeah, I was probably 9.
It's called dissociation.
From the ceiling. And I was watching it happen. It was not me anymore. And from that day, it was not me. And when you, so now I really focus my energy on telling my children that this is out there. And
do you dissociate when you get stressed still?
No.
So no more. How did you get over that? Because that's the real liability of trauma, is it sort of your brain learns or wires to do that and then just keeps doing that in you know, overwhelming situations.
Well,
did you EMDR or something? Or,
no, yeah? I'm very because I've done so many years of therapy, but I've also done the way I deal with stress, like my birth mother when she died in my arms last 2 years ago at Christmas, literally in my arms, instead of having I savored the moment, like she literally died in my arms, and I thought, we came into this world together alone. She put me up for adoption. She was 17. Mm. And she died. Like, this is so prophetic. This is unbelievable. And I'm able to savor the moment and really absorb it as opposed to panicking. And this is life.
And well, there was an appreciation. It sounds like there was an appreciation for that moment.
Well,
very much.
To me, when I hear you talking like that, I just hear, oh, my God, you're a resilient person.
Yeah.
You are resilient.
Aren't we all in
no.
some
reason?
No.
To some extent more than we expect, but it's not what you're describing. To the extent that you're able to experience these things now is pretty remarkable.
I will say that it hit me on my 50th birthday 2 weeks ago. I really thought about her, and it really was hard for me. Everyone was like, oh, you don't want to celebrate because it's your 50th. I said, I could give a shit. I don't care. It's the fact that she... I only had 15 years with her, and I was pissed off about it, and it really bugged me. But then I think I thought all those overwhelming thoughts came back to me about her, losing her in my arms, and just being really grateful that she wasn't with one of her seven brothers or sisters or her other daughters.
Gratitude, again.
Oh, my God.
Most people, trauma survivors, have trouble experiencing gratitude.
Oh, no. I was like, of course she was with me. You know, and also my story is so layered, and I told you it's the Rolling Stones and the Donovan.
What?
The whole story about my birth father, what I just found. I didn't tell you this?
No.
My story gets richer every day. I got a letter in the mail from a man in England, and I saw the letter, and I was like, I don't know anybody in England. Who the fuck is this? And then I opened it up, and it said, hi, my name is Ian Griffiths, and I live in England, and I'm doing your family tree, and your name came up because your birth father. And I thought, oh, well, there's a name I haven't heard. I didn't meet him. When I met my birth mom, she was remarried, and
she was in Canada, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
They're all in Canada, yeah. So to recap, my long story, I was adopted and I found my birth family when I was 34 through my psychiatrist. She said, hire a detective. You're resourceful. And I was like, I'm going to hire a detective. Yeah. And I did. And 4 weeks later, I had a whole birth family at my door. And it was literally, my mother and father, they were both immigrants from Europe. And they came to Canada at 17 and 16. They got pregnant with me. Put me up for adoption, got married 3 months later, tried to get me back, couldn't, went on to have two other daughters. So full sisters. And when my mom was, 20 years later, when my birth sister was, I was 12. My other sister was 6 and the other one was 1. My mom left my birth dad, married another man. So she was with him for a while. She was with Stan until he passed, the second husband. But in the letter, it basically said, we're doing this research, and you might know your dad's cousin. Her name is Linda Lawrence. That's my my sister-in-law, and she's been married to Donovan, the singer, for 45 years.
Wow.
And I was like, okay, I've interviewed Donovan on several occasions, so I emailed him back. He wrote me the old-fashioned way. It was really great, this letter.
An epistolary
letter. Yeah, it was so cool.
Paper.
Yes. And so I messaged him back on email and I said, not only, of course, I know who Donovan is, but I've interviewed Donovan at least 10 times. And I wonder if Linda, my cousin, was ever at, you know, any of these interviews.
Oh, wow.
And he said, well, yeah, of course we know who you are. And yes, she was at one. She was on Good Day LA with Donovan and she was in the green room, but I don't think you two met.
Wow.
Then it gets even crazier. My neighbor Kathleen, whom I love,
your current neighbor,
yes, you guys met her, she gets online and she said, well, if it's the woman who's with Linda Lawrence, she was with the Rolling Stones' Brian Jones first and they have a son. Turns out they do, and she was with Brian for 7 years, and her son with him, Julian, looks exactly like my Rocco. So we've been sharing pictures where Donovan's daughters with my cousin look exactly like my birth sister. So I've been able to just like do split screens and send them all. We're all floored right now. So I was supposed to meet Donovan 2 weeks ago here in Pasadena.
Pasadena?
He was playing.
Random.
I know, a small show. And I was in Florida. And they know I'm a single mom. And so they invited me to go and meet them in England. He actually lives in Ireland, in a castle, of course.
Wow.
So my life just, everything unfolds. And I'm like, of course, this is so fabulous. Like, I fucking love the Rolling Stones. They're my favorite band. Of course this would happen. And it's just fun for me. Like, life is such a journey. So I'm lucky. I'm blessed.
But it's such a, we don't get to hear, Jenna's looking at me the way
crazy,
she just
right?
did, because we don't get to hear that kind of the kind of
gratitude.
Perspective and gratitude
oh,
very often.
Oh, really?
That's what we're trying to get people to all the time.
Oh.
And we never get them there.
Oh, really? Yeah, but you've known me almost 24 years, Drew. You know that I was not always grateful. I was through the darkness.
You had a lot more.
I was confused
I can see the resiliency, but you're upset and anxious and all that stuff, spinny stuff, which is all post-trauma stuff, you know.
I would think.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt, in ways that when you're molested as a kid, in the ways, and I thought about this the other day, you know, the father that adopted me is the greatest guy, Big Jim, the kindest. And I was thinking, did it impede my relationship with him? It certainly did.
Was he was the perpetrator?
No.
No.
God, no. He
okay.
was the savior. He's
okay.
the man who adopted me
okay.
when I was like a year old okay. with my mom who raised me. And he's a great man. And
so having that strong presence helped add to the resiliency, you're saying?
I think so.
Yeah.
The normalcy, the resiliency, and the all. But it also impeded my relationship with him because I wanted to trust and I couldn't trust men.
Oh, yeah.
Resilience is, I mean, I've tried to understand it for so long, and I just think that some people are pre-wired that
way.
Absolutely. And I mean, I can tell you, like, when I did an interview for a radio show with another psychologist about this exact topic. And, you know, when I have like a hard day or a hard month or whatever it is, or some terrible news, like I was told last summer or the summer before that I was going to need an ostomy. And I thought, this is the worst news ever. You know, I'm a single mom. Like, who's going to want to date me with that?
What's an ostomy? I'm sorry.
A bag. Like from Crohn's
disease.
She has no colon.
Disease. She has Crohn's.
I have no colon. Right.
Oh, you have Crohn's.
Yeah.
Okay, wow.
So then the doctor was
she
like,
she doesn't have a bag now.
I don't have
okay.
a bag, right. But it's possible one day, right? And so that same day, I went to see the surgeon, and he was like, look, I think we're at this point. This is what you need. And it was like during lunchtime. So I go back to work.
Jeez.
And I go, my next patient is this guy like who's like 48 with AIDS and all these multiple opportunistic infections. And like I leave the room and I think to myself, you know what? if that guy could trade with me, like, today.
Yeah, he would.
Like, he would. And I would never trade with him, right? And, like,
of course.
And so we were talking about this. Right. And I was driving home, and I was thinking to myself, why am I so upset about this? My grandparents survived the Holocaust.
Oh, my God.
Why?
Yes.
Like, this isn't a bad day.
Yes.
Like, that's a bad day.
Yes.
That guy that's never going to go home and, like, hug his family, is going to die in the hospital, that's a bad day.
Oh, yeah. The bad day is the Holocaust. Like,
totally.
When you look at these documentaries of the six women who got together again, and they were little girls.
Yes.
They were 12 years old. And that's fucking resilience. But perspective leads to resilience.
But I also think that, like, I believe that it was in my blood. Like, it's in my genes. Like, my grandparents survived this. Like,
did they? And this is whose parents?
My mother's parents.
And did they push the trauma onto her a little bit?
This is an interesting question.
Because
what
happens is the children of survivors of the Holocaust get a big dose of what's called intergenerational trauma. I went to college with a bunch of those, and they were dosed up. Trust me.
What respect? Like a guilt? What do they do to the
Well, the intergenerational trauma is a hard thing to go ahead if you want
to. It's that trauma that wasn't, may or may not have been processed, sort of transferred to another.
Let's put it, if for instance, the classic way it's transmitted is if somebody is beaten as a kid, they'll beat their kids.
Right.
That's a classic. It's trauma gets repeated in behaviors, right, even when they're the things you hated the most.
But how do they?
But you know what? Okay, so I
don't know about this.
What could they do to their kids? No, but my God, they were.
Well, the ones I dealt with, every day. Get an A in this test. Do you understand what we went through in my day? Let me tell you what we went through all day, every day.
Oh. Eat all of your food.
Eat all of your food. We never had food. We never scrubbed it. And, you have a fever. Let me tell you about fevers. We had kids dying all around.
It almost diminishes whatever they're going through.
It minimizes.
They'll never live up to what they had to go through.
Well, you're going to have to take on their trauma.
Oh, my God.
And whatever you're feeling as a child doesn't matter. We have to take a break. Be right back after this. Well, of course, you've heard me talk about Bergamot Mega Plus. It's derived from extracts of the bergamot citrus fruit. That's right. This is in the Calabria region of Italy. They use it there like crazy. They've used it for generations. It is something that's extremely rich in polyphenols. Now, I don't typically get behind supplements, but this is one I can sign off on. It is known to reduce the risk of heart disease. The Italian government has actually done some very good research on bergamot, as well as many studies to prove its effectiveness. Bergamot Mega Plus, it's a natural statin, right? That's an HMG-CoA reductase inhibitor. That's much like the medicines that people take, I myself take. Lowers triglycerides, raises HDL, lowers LDL. Some people take bergamot with the statin even. So it addresses also conditions faced by millions of people worldwide. That is the so-called metabolic syndrome, which is increased abdominal fat, high cholesterol, high blood sugar, high triglycerides, high blood pressure. And it helps with that. It helps with insulin resistance. Now, I do suggest that you, of course, talk to your doctor if there's any question at all. And there are alternatives pharmaceutically that many doctors may recommend. But Bergamot Mega Plus offers an all-natural option. Cardiologists and physicians all over the world have recommended it. Its effectiveness is the subject, as I said, of many good quality scientific studies. So to learn more, visit bergamot.com. That's B-E-R-G-A-M-E-T. That is bergamot.com. Or click on the Bergamot banner on our website. I suggest you do so. Back, it is a lot to go through those sorts of traumas.
Yeah.
It's not like radio, Jillian.
Come right way back. Better. Like,
wait. I love it.
But we take breaks. We come right back.
And I can swear.
Yeah. And I know.
That's amazing.
Is Steve your engineer? Steve?
We have Colin. He's young and sweet and he gets it.
He's kind of an Asian guy? Is he?
Yeah. He's not kind of Asian. He's fully
Asian. Guy. Okay. Yeah. Well, I have to.
Actually, I think it's funny.
I have to ethnicities don't register very well with me. I have to like focus and go, isn't that
no,
what that
is? No, he is. He's half.
I think you know, no, seriously, they don't. I don't really see.
He's Caucasian squared, if you will.
I just would recognize him if I saw him.
Okay.
I wouldn't say, oh, that's an Asianness. I would just have to, if I'm going to describe it, I have to like go, is that
horrible driver.
I have to think
it's a horrible
about
driver.
It. How dare you?
So,
intergenerational transmission of trauma is a common thing.
But don't you think that everyone, like, this is how I look at life. Everyone goes through different areas of what you were talking about, well, like,
but careful,
the trauma.
Careful. You're hearkening back to the times when we first met, mm-hmm. when you were like, everyone gets abused. Everyone gets sexually
That's
abused.
True.
You sort of have that perspective. Maybe that was part of your resiliency.
I think it was.
Yeah.
It was a way of rationalizing it in her head. Like,
correct.
This is normal. It happens to everyone. And
correct.
So,
and
this trauma is not really
but that's
normal.
Coping.
Yeah.
I told Drew a great story when I was working in Miami. I was a weather girl at the crazy station there. If it bleeds, it leads. And we had two. It was all female a cast. And this was 25 years ago. So it was two female anchors and a female sportscaster. And I did the weather. And we were all super tight. And I remember going into the makeup room, and there was a story about a child being molested. And I remember the two of the women were like, "Oh my God, this is horrible." And I looked at them. I was like, "Well, but hello, it happens all the time. I mean, everybody's been molested." And I literally said that, and they looked.
I think you mentioned grandfathers. Even.
Yeah, I was like, "Everyone has a creepy uncle or a friggin' grandfather who's a little too touchy feely." And they were like, "Yeah,
no,
not so much." And I was like, "Are you?" I go, "You guys are lying then." And they said, "No, we can assure you we're not lying. Like, we've never been." I go, "What?" I was 25. It never occurred to me that not every little girl was not molested.
Huh.
And so she called me.
Well, I called
you. In a panic.
Wait, I was in Miami then.
I know.
I called you.
You just moved.
I just, when I was a year
right.
and a half later.
That's right.
Wait, I've asked Drew to take me on as a patient and he refuses.
No.
Now I'm offended.
No, he never did. He
no, I referred
like,
her
wait
out.
A second.
Trust
he referred me.
Now I'm offended.
No, he never.
I'll send her to you next time.
He never took me on, but he referred. And because he was, yeah, that's a whole other story.
We had 6 month old triplets.
Wait, were you guys living here?
No. No,
okay.
We had a little house.
That would have just put it into perspective. But, yeah, you guys had 6-month-old triplets, and I called the house and thought, poor Susan. I called. I went. It was completely unethical.
Well, but if I remember right, because it was Jillian, she thought she said, "Oh, I love Jillian Barbie. Go help her."
Later,
right?
later. Susan, later, much later.
No, I was in a bad mood that day. I had triplet 3-year-old.
Yeah,
or whatever.
You had 3 6-month-olds.
6 months old.
Come on. I mean, I think about the balls it took to do that. Then I also think, where must I have been mentally to have to feel like you want to reach out to us? I had never met him. I just called up and
I listened, of course.
It's really interesting that people would just call and they want your advice. Like, we didn't really feel that then. You know, he was just doing the show. And,
yeah.
But it was starting to build his, you know.
Oh, my gosh. Everyone I know is like, they feel like they know him.
Yeah.
From growing up listening. I felt like that the first time I met him. I was like, listen, I came up to him after the show and I was like, listen, if you never invite me back and I never get to see you again, I just want to say one thing. And it's that I started listening to you in sixth grade in like the early 90s.
Wow.
And this is like a total full circle moment for me. So if I get, I just want you to know that. And he like gave me a hug and he was like, I'll see you next week. And I was like, okay.
Wow.
You know,
was that when you
got
went
to
HLN? Yeah.
Oh my God.
To HLN. Yeah. It was an accident that they found me anyway. So it was very.
How did
cool.
we find you? I don't remember.
I treated a patient at Cedars who happened to be the mother of somebody. One of your producers.
Oh, no kidding. Interesting.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Jillian used to be the hottest weather girl on.
Used to be. How dare you?
Well, I still.
There are none anymore.
Well, wait.
No, there are so many.
So that was actually my dream job.
Not
in
though,
college, all I wanted to be was a weather girl.
She'd come out.
Well,
like,
Jillian invented that.
I know. And my boyfriend used to say, you have a nice voice. You should do it. And I was like, a nice voice.
It's not what I want to hear.
Yeah.
But Jillian would come out in these like crazy shoes and
Dolce
these
and
awesome
Gabbana.
Pants. And, you
oh,
know,
yeah.
all the other girls always had their little dresses on. And she just always rocking her style. That's why I loved her so
she
much.
She put
and,
weather girls on the map.
Then,
yes. She invented it. And that's why Stern picked you up, right? Or did you get you in NFL?
No. You know what? No. Stern picked me up because I started talking about him in 1995, 96.
On Good Day LA?
Yeah. Mm. And I would say every day if Dorothy did a story and she would say, oh, a mini driver did it. And I was like, oh, my God. But I'd be like, but then she went on Howard Stern and did a whole thing where she said this, and this about her sex life. So every day I would sort of mention Howard and how he was such a pioneer, but I didn't know that at the time. I just knew that he was getting so much more out of the mainstream, these celebrities than the mainstream.
Isn't it
media
crazy how he's really become the destination of, I mean, he's.
For us, like, no, because we knew it back then.
Well, yeah, you're right. But I never thought it would happen. I thought there was too much history there.
When he
there.
Did the NBC show, which I never watched, The America's Got Talent, but when my parents called me and said, all right, now we know why you like this Howard Stern, I was like, my parents are 75. I died.
Yeah, Yeah.
Which my mother used to say to me, why do you go on there and say those crazy things and that he's this and he's that? And then, of course, he did AGT and everything changed. But
there's one thing I understand about Howard. Maybe you can help me with it. Because he always addresses this topic with you. Why does he always go to anal sex? He always goes there.
I think he's fascinated,
but I think it's always his shock move. And he still uses it even when he's talking to somebody serious. He'll pull it out.
He doesn't do it with his wife.
No, he doesn't. I like how you said he'll pull it out. That's funny, Joe. She's not into that, and he's made that very clear.
But
I'm not sure
he's into it. He's into the shock part
value.
Of it.
Yeah,
and but the
why do we know that? You know?
Yeah. And is that so shocking anymore? You know,
right.
Somebody said to me one day, like they said, oh, you grew up in Canada. It's more European. That's why you're more shocking.
More
and I was
European.
Like, what? It's not shocking. I just think certain things are not shocking to me. So if it's sex with someone you love, it's not that big of a deal. Yeah, yeah. I'm not hung up. I don't get tied up. I'd like to, but
I think that's also like part of why you're so resilient. Is like you don't seem to sweat the small stuff, and you recognize like what's small and what's not.
It's hard to do that.
Because
things feel big to
but
people.
But don't you?
Yeah, I don't give
No, but listen.
I've made a lot of poor choices in my life, and I don't need anyone judging me. I don't judge anybody for what they do.
Me too. Like, see, that's – okay, so that I think that's a very big observation. I don't judge people. And I remember when I met my birth family and just how different we were, but how alike we were. And my birth sisters – here I am. I have the same mother and father, and I had never met anybody who looked like me or acted. And – you know, one is a professor and she's an engineer, and the other one works at the Film Society in Toronto. She's super smart. She makes documentary films.
I bet everybody's super smart. Your genetic.
I'm the fucking idiot in the family. Oh,
no.
Absolutely.
I don't think you're.
But when you look at what they do and what they've contributed, it's a joke. Like I was hot on the weather in the fucking NFL.
Didn't we just say that you actually put the weather girl on the map?
Yeah, you created
like
something.
You actually were like the pioneer of that.
I was. You know, the funniest thing is my sister, when I first met them, I had written them a letter. They didn't know who I was. And so I said, my birth sister on the phone, the engineer, she said, would we see you up here in Canada? And I said, well, I do a show with Pamela Anderson, but I'm only a guest star. Like I'm not a regular. And I do a show on, I go, yes, actually, I'm on the NFL. And she goes, oh, well, my husband and I, he's also an engineer, total overachievers, those girls. We watch this show. Is it the one with Terry Bradshaw? And I go, yes. She goes, oh, we love Terry Bradshaw. She goes, you're not the weather girl. And I go, yes. And she goes, this is our first conversation. She cups the phone and she says, Tim, to her husband, do you know that girl that we like watching on the weekends? That's my sister. And full sister. I mean, we had the same mother and father.
That's crazy.
So it was so fucking crazy and so great. But
how
was Terry Bradshaw?
Yeah. No. Oh, I loved him. He got remarried. It kind of killed. Like, wow, I just found out he got remarried. I was like, huh. Because we always had like a thing. We never kissed, but we always flirted.
I met him a few times. I did that show we had called Home Team or something.
Yes, he was crazy.
I love working with him. I still have football he signed up on my shelf.
He was very honest when he went on.
Such a nice guy.
Such a sweetheart. Yeah. And back in the day, he had two daughters.
Yes, he was always talking
Aaron
about his
daughters. And Rachel, and they were 14 and 15.
That's about when I met him. That was 90s,
that was,
right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And
that
was when I first started working. And then he said...
God, they must be 30 now.
They are.
Jesus.
Yeah. Well, Rachel's gorgeous. She's... was married to an NFL player, and he sadly died.
Oh,
she's
what?
Young. Yeah.
What happened?
He got in a car accident.
Oh.
Yeah. So, I still talk with her, and they always wanted me to date their dad, and I was like, oh, you guys are crazy. They're like, no, everyone wants to date him, but you're the one we want. They used to fly in to visit their dad, and instead of staying at the Beverly Hills Hotel where he was, they would stay with me at my house in the Valley.
Wow.
Yeah, and they would go through things in life, you know, prepubescent things, and I would just take them to dermatologists if they had.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no, I was the girl that fixed everything.
Oh, my God, how fun.
Yeah, and so. But
that's interesting history I never knew. Right?
Yeah.
So do you feel like he's like the one that got away?
No. I'm just like that with kids.
I'm not sure
he'd
be a great partner.
No, and I together. I used to say to Aaron and Rachel.
Nice guy, but I'm not sure he'd be a great partner.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm sorry.
I would say we would kill each other.
Yeah,
You know, I think we're so much alike in many ways, but also he's the star and he's, you know, I've got great kids. I've made poor choices with certain things, but I'm very blessed in life. Like I say I'm unlucky in love. But I'm very lucky in other areas.
I'm with you, girl.
Yeah.
And
you actually had a good relationship. You fucked up.
With whom?
You told me. Your first husband, was it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Kind.
Yeah.
Major League Baseball player, kind, loving. I thought he was just, we were too
boring.
Boring.
See, and this is I see this like existential regret since I work with old people, right? So I'm telling you that like as we were talking to a psychic earlier, my gut instinct is like this is what's going to happen in my life. But I've seen a lot of men especially, not as many women, who say, you know, I do their history, right? Are you married? How many times you've been married? And I'm writing their history down. And I would say like 80% of the men I talk to who have been married multiple times say, you know, if I could go back, I will say that my first wife or my first spouse, that was really the love of my life. And I just thought the grass was going to be greener on the other side. And man, every other wife I've had has been even more high maintenance. And I should have stayed with that first
one. Absolutely.
It's like the story of every man over 75 who's dying.
That's like interesting.
In West Los Angeles.
Yeah,
to be fair.
In West Los Angeles. Like, yeah. I should have stayed with that first wife.
That makes sense, though.
Yeah.
And
see,
I'm
honey, that's why I stay with you.
He knows. All the rest are high maintenance. The grass is not green.
Well, I used to say to my second ex, you know, you'll never have it like this again. Meaning, I never asked for anything. I gave birth to the kids. I paid every bill. I let him be.
Seems like
him.
You're better with that now, right now.
I am, but I still have bitterness in my heart.
Like, oh, I'm sure. You can't.
My
not.
Heart is.
You can't not.
Yeah, I'm done. Like, yeah. When people say to me, oh, you'll date. Oh, you get married. I'm like, yeah, you know I won't because I feel like I gave everything. Like, I'm exhausted at this point. I don't care to look great anymore. I don't care anymore. I'm not trying to be 105 pounds. I'm not trying to fit into my size 2 Dolce & Gabbana. I don't give a shit. My life is my children, and I don't care if I date. I really, truly don't because I gave everything to the wrong person who didn't appreciate.
I think really what capped was the way he treated you when you did separate. That to me, I was watching that. That's just unconscionable.
It was bad. Yeah, it was bad. But it was the true person coming out.
Yep.
The true.
Yeah.
Yep. I had dinner the other night. This is interesting when I go back on perspective wise. I was very close with Kris Jenner during my. She held my baby showers. I mean, she was so good to me. And this was way before they were on TV. She was Kris Jenner, and nobody knew who she was. And Kylie and Kendall were 7 and 8. So I had dinner with her the other night, and we...
You're back. Didn't you have a little bit of a separation from her?
I did.
Yeah.
I did, because...
Well, it's good you're back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. My assistant of 11 years left me to go work. I introduced her
to
Kris.
Did you guys talk about that at this dinner?
No.
It's over.
It was dinner for the assistant.
Oh.
So we all kind of came back together.
Oh,
she's Kendall and Kylie's manager.
Oh, right.
So things worked out amazing for her, obviously.
Yeah.
But Kris was able to put perspective on things for me because she was there for everything and she saw the bigger picture. So I was crazy in love, and what she saw was you ought to get a prenup, you ought to slow down. And I was like, I'm not slowing down for shit. Like, you guys don't know.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And not that it would have mattered, because he didn't take anything when we divorced.
Well, that's good.
It's hard to be objective when you're like
crazy.
In love.
Yeah.
And actually, one of my therapists said to me once, as I was getting divorced, and I thought, like, you know, it's so hard for me to find someone because I feel like I'm really selective. And much like you, like, I'm pretty independent financially. I don't really need anyone else. I'm not in a rush.
Men find that frightening. They don't like that. On paper, it looks great. But when they get with a woman.
Yeah.
Why?
My ex said it best.
Yeah.
I said, I don't need you. I want you. And he said to me, I'd rather be needed.
That's most men want
to
be
needed. They don't want to be wanted.
This is why.
Like, in other words, this is it. This is, we just fucking figured it out right now.
Dude.
Men want to be needed. Hunter, gatherer, I need you. Damsel in distress. Well, we're not that.
Yes.
And so on paper, they're like, holy shit. I remember his friend saying to me after we divorced, and they would say, he always was like trying to paint you in this light. And we were like, God, she's cool.
You know what, to me?
She's this and that.
I got to tell you, you're equating it with sort of our historical anthropology and stuff. But to me, as a man, I think about guys who would act like that. And it seems to me like when you need somebody, you need that person. But when you want somebody, you could also want that and want that and want that. And that's where guys get threatened. Because the one could change or be directed somewhere
else.
Maybe,
Men
are very weird. We are very weird about that.
That's interesting. And that puts, because I never understood that. So perhaps that's
it. And a lot of men have different needs. But like, men generally don't like to be alone. They need to be needed.
Yes. That's why.
We do need to be needed too. It's true.
That's why when women move on or they separate.
Right.
I mean, I haven't really dated in 3 years. He's had full on, not only dating,
you know what else?
Relationships.
Oh, wait, one more quick thing on psychological. Yeah. I'm just trying to listen to my own brain of this wanting thing. Men also have this deep, weird fear of being consumed. It's sort of a castration anxiety.
Like,
so wanting is to be consumed. You know what I mean?
Right. Oh. Or
just
told what to do.
Morality to it.
Like,
yeah.
God forbid.
Yeah.
That's
oh,
the castration.
God.
So, Jill and I, if you didn't know, we were actually married to the same guy.
It's
so weird.
We're just finding
even know this.
Wait, was yours controlling?
No, mine was like, you know, the most charming narcissist on the planet.
Oh.
And I love him. And I love narcissists. I have a problem with them. I attract them. And I think they're quite charming, actually. And for the record, I love my ex-husband. I really do. We're like super good friends. And he never did during the divorce what sounds like your ex-husband.
Wow.
Does. No, my ex-husband was like a mensch. And my lawyer sat down and said, listen, you've been a schmuck. Here's what we want. Just sign the fucking paper.
And
like, don't even try to argue this. And he was like, okay. And his lawyer was like, don't sign that. You don't have to give her that much. And my lawyer was like, yes, you do. You're an asshole. Just sign that paper. And like, eat it. And, you know, and
does he know that he's a narcissist or no? Because most narcissists don't know. Yeah,
yeah. No.
True narcissists will never know what they are.
Well, they just feel like they're a healthy person. They're just
well, they're all only healthy.
Yes,
they're
yes.
know-it-alls. You know nothing.
Right.
They know everything.
That's
you can't
right.
win
and,
the argument with that.
Oh,
right.
argument. There. I learned to stop talking. I would not, because if I said I want, everything would get shot because he was a sniper. Everything would get shot out of the air.
Right.
It was just like it would come out of my mouth and it would just get blown away. So I just stopped talking, wanting, needing. Didn't have lunch with my friends anymore because why? You just had lunch with her 4 days ago.
But you know what? Like, I was going to say about just in terms of like the psychology, like this is not the psychology. Let's just say that you're married to a guy who views himself as a king. Okay.
He
loves to be adored. He needs to be needed.
Yeah.
And you're like a princess. So I met my husband at 19 years old. He's 10 years older than I am. Right. So I was like a princess. He could take care of me. I adored him. He represented all things stable and secure, and which is like totally the opposite of my dad when I was little, right? Like, and so I marry him. But then what
your
happens
dad,
is...
Your dad's kind of narcissistic too, though, so you probably had a fittedness
totally,
with it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Well, he's Israeli. I mean, you know, there's that.
I met her. I love her dad. He's awesome.
He also loves Drew. But what happens with the princess is that the princess grows up and she becomes a queen. And so when she becomes a queen, she becomes an equal. And the king no longer needs her. The king needs a princess. And this is how I justify and tell the story of like my own life, because I'm sure you can imagine like my ex-husband has a girlfriend who's much younger. And again, it's like the princess.
Of course.
Because the princess does the doting and she needs him. And I moved into a place where I didn't.
Did he say to you, oh, you're older, you're super jealous?
No. Oh my gosh.
I had to go through that because my narcissistic ex had the 30-year-old model and he was like, you're almost in menopause. Poor you. You're probably super jealous. Like, no. I had to listen. And I was like paying all the bills. I didn't get any money from him. He didn't work. So understand, I had 7 years of paying everything. He didn't.
Oh my gosh. No. My ex.
But I was ever
not
a princess. I was older than him. I was always the worker bee. So I didn't have the princess turning into the queen.
I think he's more. I don't know your husband.
Yeah.
I'm not diagnosing him, but it has a little more of a which way you describe.
I think PTSD.
A little more sociopathic.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, it doesn't sound like he has much empathy or compassion.
None.
Whereas, like, I always tell people my ex-husband is the best husband ever now,
as
right?
A friend.
but even as, like, a co-parenting partner, you know, like, I got a promotion recently and there was, like, a new handbag sitting in my doorstep.
Like, what?
Yeah, like, but here's the thing. When I was married to him and I used to be like, hey, you know, I want this gift or I like that house, and it would always be like, I don't like you telling me what to do. But now it's like these things just come.
Well, narcissists can be very charming. They can be great friends.
Well, they are in the beginning.
But then when you're intimate, they don't tolerate intimacy. And so intimacy is more the domain of exploitation. And so it's,
what does that mean? I'm sorry.
We'll talk about it after the break. Okay, we are back. And we're supposed to follow up with something here.
We already followed up.
No, wait. You asked me a question about something. I forgot.
Oh, it was something you said. It was a clinical terminology.
Oh, exploitation.
Yes.
That you exploit. Value,
I know what exploitation
valuing,
is. But...
Valuing your feelings. Your feelings have no value because their feelings have no value in certain circumstances. Feelings are just sort of bothersome.
So narcissists at their core are like hollow inside.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
And so that's where they come from. So there's this disconnection. They can't do intimacy because they don't know how.
But let me ask, how are they able to, why are they always right? Why are you not only always wrong, but your opinion is like is zero. Theirs is the only one that matters, and you're nothing.
You're more of a personality expert than I am.
Well, you're getting again more towards the sociopathic range, but it's they always have to feel. They feel very tiny inside, so they have to feel very big.
Like overcompensate.
They overcompensate.
Yeah, and to your point.
They're not aware of it at all. It's not like they feel tiny inside. They don't.
It's almost
impossible to get at that in treatment and stuff.
And there's like a million theories as to how they even get there in the first place.
Yeah.
Linked to the mom, mostly. The primary character.
And the biology and trauma and blah, 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 blah.
Makes sense.
Sharon Tate.
Yep.
Who was on your podcast, Susan, right?
Deborah was, yes.
Deborah Tate.
Well, Sharon kind of came through.
Sharon did come through. But talk about what you were going to do in Sacramento.
So, yeah, Deborah Tate was on with you.
Calling out.
Right.
And then also she did a little piece with MC, one of my psychics. And we actually had more of a connection with Sharon Tate on that show. But she's been a guest on also
yeah, she's
calling.
Amazing.
She's been on this show. Life.
Yeah, we did a whole thing about victims and stuff.
Yes, so. And Deborah is an advocate, obviously.
Yeah. She's Sharon Tate's sister.
She was 16 when Sharon was murdered. And so we go back 20 years. I have helped her with her daughter, Ariana, who's now 30. I met Ariana when she was 16. I helped pay for her schooling. I've kind of been a sister to Sharon for 20 years, or to Deborah, rather. So I go to the hearings with her. I've been to the parole hearings. This time, next week, we're going to Tex Watson's hearing, which is his, I believe, 19th or 20th hearing. The parole board just advised for parole for Leslie Van Houten. We got 140,000 signatures, and we got them to vote against it to keep her behind bars. So anyway, we have to go. This time, I'm not going as Deb's plus one. That's usually they have like a friend of the family that can go. I'm going on behalf of the LaBiancas, whom Tex Watson murdered the night after Sharon. So I'm going to be speaking for Lino LaBianca's grandson, Tony.
Is there any possibility it's going to get parole?
Well,
they've not been paroling. Deborah's had great success.
Yeah, but we work hard. At that. And so.
But there was
Leslie Van Houten almost got it. No, she did get it.
She did get it.
Yes, and that's why we went up to Sacramento.
But then the governor wouldn't sign it or something?
No, the governor overturned the parole boards. Yeah.
That was good.
Thank God. So, people always say to me, oh, but they'll never get released. And I'm like, yeah, they will. So what's going to happen is, and I talked to the DA on the other day, and she called and just said, look, this is going to be at least a 12-hour hearing. Bring food. You know, you can't wear jeans. You got to da da da. It's all the same. But it's going to be 10 hours of Texas attorneys saying what a great model prisoner he's been, which he has. But he's fathered 4 kids in prison.
Oh, God.
And Sharon was 2 weeks away from giving birth
to a
baby.
How do you do that? How do you
father? You're allowed to have these sorts of
conjugal
visits.
Yeah. Oh, he got married. Yeah, he married her in prison. And he's fathered 4 kids that we pay for as tax.
Well, there's all kinds of stories of
these. Yeah, these kids go to Brigham Young. I mean, this is no joke. These kids all went to Brigham Young University. He went called up Wikipedia. He was very upset that they put that he had, you know, 3 sons and a daughter. He's like, I don't want that out there. It's like, well, you freaking murdered 7 people and you ruined fucking lives. Shut up. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, I mean,
take your notes that you wrote in the margins of for WikiLeaks and shut the fuck up. So,
what's that?
A small price for fame.
Yeah.
Yeah, for infamy, you know. Yeah. And so, the whole lot, if you know the whole story, they murdered, you know, 5 people one night and then 2 people the next night. But when they murdered Sharon, she was 2 weeks away. She was the last to be murdered. She had 45 minutes of hell. I mean, literally, she was like, murder me, but take my baby first, go to the hospital with it, then I can die, whatever. She was begging, please, like, and it's all documented. They testified about it. They're savage. Ugh. So why, if you are truly sorry and he's become a born-again Christian in prison and he's got a ministry there and he helps other people, then shut the fuck up and live the rest of your life. If you are truly sorry, then you won't have the balls to come and face the families that you ruined. And have the tenacity.
I'm dying to hear what he actually says. You're going to have to tell
me. Oh, it's going to be, I mean, it'll be everywhere. Because, associate everybody.
But how he rationalizes this has just got to be.
Oh, well, he says.
And he doesn't actually know that when he comes out of prison, because he's been in this prison for a while, like, he's not he probably won't be as well received.
Right.
I mean, in prison, he's helping people and they think he's great. And in the real world,
and also like,
he should be careful to walk outside.
What's happening now in California is because when you hit a certain age, I think it's 66, you get parole every year.
Oh,
except if you're Charles Manson, but you come up for parole every year. He's the only one. And ironically, Charles Manson is the only one who didn't commit any of these murders. He
organized them.
Organized it. He did. He's like the Osama bin Laden, so.
All right. I think that about does it. I'm loving how these podcasts are evolving. We've done some really interesting podcasts. And I appreciate you being here, being
of
a part of this one.
I love you guys.
The whole idea was, you know, for Bob and I, was that this just all about life. You know, obviously Bob and I have the perspective of addiction and mental health.
Sure.
But we're just trying to get into all kinds of areas and different things with this.
And it takes you down so many different roads because look what we talked about today.
I don't know. We started somewhere. I can't even remember.
It's the Jenna and Jillian show.
I just got to know Jillian and have like a new best friend.
But
in my neighborhood. This
I
know.
I like introducing you to your best friends. People she likes to shop and hang out with.
I do like to shop. I'm a good shopper.
Me too. Have you been to the Village yet?
It's obvi. There's like a water park there that your kids can run in half naked. It's amazing.
And then you can go, and more importantly, you can go to Joey and have some cocktails afterwards.
Exactly.
You guys have been there at the same time, no doubt.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure.
You guys have a lot in common, too, because you're a Rodin and Field specialist, and you're a home shopping network. Saleswoman du jour, which you're amazing, by the way.
Yeah, talk about your stuff because Susan loves your products.
I know. I love both of your products.
What are they? I need to hear about
this. I work for Too Faced, but you're Rodin.
Oh, I love Too Faced. I am an RFX achiever at Rodin and Fields.
Sorry about the dog, everybody. I have to go get the dog.
Yeah. I started that 3 years ago. It was totally an accident. And I started using the products because I ran out of face wash and someone was selling it on Facebook. And I was like, hey, I'll support you. Like,
that's
started
so
using
cool.
it. And within like 2 weeks, my face was totally different. And my mom and some friends wanted to buy it, and so she called me and said, like, I'm happy to sell it to your friends, but why don't you? And I was like, okay, like, maybe it's in my mind, you know what I swear, I was like, maybe it'll be like $500 a month and I'll like, it's like a new pair of Rag & Bone boots.
Yes,
like in my mind, that's how lame I am, right? I'm like, I know there are people who could use that to put food on the table, but I was just thinking like a Rag & Bone booty. And so
that's funny.
And so I started, and then little by little, people would start using it and then reaching out and be like, I want to sell this. I don't know anyone selling it. And now it's been 3 years. It's my most lucrative job, which is why I was able to put it
out. That's hysterical. That's unbelievable.
You would be shocked if you knew the income you could earn on this.
So it's face wash.
Why aren't you selling it? It's in Canada, and there's like, it's new in Canada. I know. I don't
probably because I have a contract. My face stuff is with Too Faced at HSN.
I do love
Too
Faced, though.
Thank you. We are the number one brand there. These guys started it 20 years ago. I knew them 20 years ago, and they were makeup artists. They've since got married. Two guys that are beyond loaded. And Too Faced doesn't do any commercial advertising. We don't, but they're all over the world now. And these guys have, I saw them go from like working at Neiman Marcus in Newport Beach to private jets to France and houses and everywhere. It's like,
do they do better than Sex Mascara?
Yes.
Hello, that is my jam.
What's
BTS,
it called?
Better than Sex
better
Mascara.
Than Sex Mascara.
Jared
it
and
is...
Jeremy, they name everything too. So.
The one thing about this life, I didn't expect it to get to makeup or mascara.
Oh.
But what I do like about today though is that we told stories that have sort of medical and clinical kinds of correlates with them, and it was good.
We tried to explain some behaviors.
It's good. That's all I wanted. That we ground the conversations. That it is about life generally, but that we ground it in certain.
Yeah.
You know,
I think I learned some things today.
Yeah, see?
I learned
about... Hope you all did, too.
I love Rag & Bone booties. Could look into that.
Thank
face.
You, guys. Right. You can continue to gush about your
Thank
makeup
you.
And booties. We're going to wrap this up. We'll see you next time.
All right, thanks.
Close your eyes and imagine the world stop turning. Can we try to bring absolution to... to love, goodbye to pain, goodbye to what you thought you knew. Oh, can we try to put our guard down? No one wants it more than you. Just look inside and see that we are. pieces. In the end, all that's left is a wreckage of